As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hear that podcast growling, mean and angry. Hear that vocal shouting, it's Danger and Jay. It's Danger.
All right, welcome to the latest edition of Hear That Podcast. Ground is presented by Visa Network, working for everyone. Paul Ingram Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic are excited to be here working for you in our playoff preview edition of The Growler. What's up, Jay?
One step closer. It feels like I haven't talked to you in a while. It's been what, 24 hours since we've got on these mics and talked about Bengals Raiders, and there's been a lot to get to this week, but I know Bengals fans are really, really gearing up and getting excited for this one. We're closing in on the 48-hour mark, and Saturday can't get here soon enough.
No, because there's just it feels like we have dissected every portion of this game, but we're going to dive in again and dissect even more today. But we got a few more treats for you. We have, first of all, if you're not familiar with one of our sort of flagship podcasts here at The Athletic, The Lead, Jay and I joined The Lead. That episode is up now on the site. You can go, if you're not a subscriber to it, just go to search The Lead on Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can, of course, find it here. And it's kind of more for the general fan that maybe not be aware of everything. If you listen to this podcast, you might know specifically, but we're on there talking about the Bengals and, of course, the curse and this team and so much about that. So you can go and enjoy that episode. And if you don't subscribe to it already, highly recommend it. Great stuff. You kind of get one big story for the day every day from around the site. And so we're on there today. Go take a listen to that. I've got a story up. One I've been working on for, geez, I think about a month now, on what is the it factor in Joe Burrow? What we hear about it, you know, he's just got this special leadership, this intangible. What is that? I think I asked everybody I could. What describe? Can you give me something to describe? I'm going to try to describe it because everybody says you just can't describe it. Well, I need you to, okay? Because I'm going to try to. So I talked to a bunch of people in and around Burrow and what that has been exactly, kind of describing the it factor in Burrow and why it has meshed so well with this group and with this team and what it has meant for their rise. That is up on the site now. You can go give that a read, and there's a lot more to talk about with that. Jay's got a story up on 51 sacks and what that you went through every single one and you broke them all down.
Watched every single one.
Yeah. So we're gonna talk a little bit more about that. You can talk, and there's a meaning behind about what, you know, because not every sack is. It's like every interception has a story. Every sack has a story. How much of them are okay that you can live with? What is the real problem here? There's a lot to be discussed in that because the sacks number is ridiculous and it is held up over their head so often. And it is thought to be kind of the reason that this team maybe won't advance in the postseason, you know, as far as they'd like to. So it's important to really dive into all that. Now Jay's got that story up. Now we, of course, still have our story up, talking to everybody this year around the team that's been around for the 31 years about the history, the curse, yes, but the drought. We use went to thesaurus.com and typed in drought and tried to use all of those to try to find different ways to say it. But there's a ton up on that story as well. Jay talked to Marvin Lewis about his view of watching this team. That's up on the site. Needless to say, there's a lot of Bengals content up on the site, and we've done like 42 podcasts. So if you need your Bengals content, there is no shortage of it as we approach Saturday 4:30 Bengals Raiders.
If we're talking content, I want some reciprocation here. I want you guys to give me some content. And I don't want to get too far ahead here, and I don't want to be a jinx or a curse or anything like that for those of you that believe in that kind of stuff. But if the Bengals pull this off, I know there's going to be a lot of you taking video. If it comes down to the end, if it comes down to a final field goal, one way or the other, make for the Bengals, miss for the Raiders, I know there's going to be a lot of you taking video. If you post a video of your reaction, whether it's exuberation, tears, whatever it is, if you post any kind of reaction to social media of you celebrating a Bengals win, please tag me in it. I don't know what I'm going to do with them, but I want to see them. I love those kind of videos as it is, and I can only imagine the release that's going to happen. So we've given you all this content this year. Please take one day to send something to me.
You know, you can't just give, Jay. You got to receive, don't you? I mean, it's just like complaining about your gifts on Christmas. It's just so you've got plenty of stuff there. We've got more for you. Vic Tafer, who covers the Raiders out in Vegas for us, comes in. He's going to give us everything from the Vegas side of things. And you've asked for this, and I have planned this for this moment, and it came through is all I can tell you. Optimistic Bobby returns. He is on today's episode. We will get to that later. And I think he has the greatest analogy ever. We came up with the best way to put it for this week and what this weekend and this next month could possibly be. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to tease it any more than that. I love it. All right. News. The only real news to come out of the week is essentially we have the always ominous Thursday limited popped up on T. Higgins with a foot. We do not know any more specifics than that. Everything else is good news, though. I mean, everybody else, Ricardo Allen back to limited, working his way through concussion protocol. Stanley Morgan went from out Wednesday to being limited and moving in the right direction. Josh Tupo didn't practice either day. Looks like he won't be out, but again, we talked about Mike Daniels. Will probably just step in to that role. Everybody else, full participants. Akeem Adeniji, full participant. Quentin Spain, full participant. Evan McPherson is going to be fine, full participant both days. So everybody looks to be all hands on deck outside of Josh Tupo. The question will be over what exactly this limited with T. Higgins was, and we'll learn more about that as we get through today. Keep it locked to us on Twitter. At Paul Daner Jr., at Jay Morrison, ATH, to give you the info on that. Any other news, Jay?
Does a weather report count as news? I mean,
let's dive into weather, because I you know what? I do think this is a relevant discussion. And sometimes I scoff at weather as whatever. Mm. I mean, you know, what can you do? Everybody's out there playing in it. I think this is a relevant discussion.
For give me some
meteorology.
Reasons.
Give me some meteorology. What do you got? Where have we? What's the latest?
Well, I mean, the high is supposed to be 27, the low of 19. It looked like earlier in the week there was a chance of precipitation. Now that appears to have pushed off to Sunday. But you're right. The weather is a big deal for a number of reasons. One, the Raiders play in a dome, and Brian Callahan pointed it out that, yes, they play road games in Denver and in Kansas City, and sometimes those are in December. So it's not foreign to them. But you look at Derek Carr's numbers in cold weather, they are not great at all. And It's just what really, almost more than the Raiders, the question for me is the Bengals. Because that game that they played back in November, that it was such a different, both teams were totally different back then. And the Bengals game plan in that one was, looked like a playoff game plan to just run the ball, be more conservative, pound it, let the dam break. And we've talked a lot about how they've flipped that script since the conservative turtling up in the San Francisco game in overtime. They've just given the ball to Joe Burrow and let him go. Can you do that in this weather? Or does the weather dictate that you go back to the game plan that you had against the Raiders back in November and just ride Joe Mixon and hope your defense keeps it close and ride Joe Mixon for as long as it takes until the dam breaks?
I mean, the Kansas City game was cold. Am I mistaken? Right?
Was it this cold, was it? I thought it was mid-30s.
I mean, not this cold, but it wasn't right. Warm. I mean, it was cold. Yeah. I mean, it's not like it was 50. I mean, you know, the Kansas City game, and they had no problem slinging it there for 446. So, or, you know, I mean, you're talking about, I don't think weather outside of wind mm-hmm. for the Bengals will inhibit or should change what their game plan should be. But I do think when you look at, you know, coming West Coast to East Coast on a short week, playing in conditions they're very much not used to. I mean, Derek Carr has played in, forget 27 degrees, five games in his whole career where it has been colder than 37 degrees. Only three that have been below freezing. So it's, you know, it's, yes, they play in Kansas City and Denver sometimes in December. But this, I mean, he's been around for a while. We're making a big deal about how many games he started. This is his first playoff appearance, and it's going to be in a conditions that he's just not super used to. You know, I kind of asked Zach Taylor about the coldest game that he'd ever played in when we talked the other day, and he ends up going through this whole life story about a cold Big 12 championship game that he lost that he wasn't happy I brought up, and then practices when he was in the CFL as the four-string quarterback in Winnipeg, and how he would just put on like ski gloves and shot put the ball just to try to get through a practice because he knew nobody cared about him.
Two hoodies.
And it was great. I mean, but he also then talked specifically about it really is different throwing a ball in the cold. I mean, the balls are harder, they're slicker, it just feels different on your hand. And so there is an adjustment period, and you've got Joe Burrow, a guy who grew up in Ohio, played at Ohio State, and hasn't played, I mean, played in plenty of cold games. Really, LSU was his only time out of the cold. And then you've got a team that plays in Vegas and that plays in a warm weather climate. And Derek Carr, who's only played three games below freezing, and none of them have gone particularly well. I mean, they're 0-5 in the five games he's played, 37 degrees. They've never scored more than 17 points. And only one game did he have a passer rating over 78. If you're looking at that small sample size, I don't know if that'll mean anything. I mean, whatever. He could come in here and be great, and nobody's going to be talking about the weather afterwards. But those are facts. Like, that is a small sample size, but I also think that in this case, when you do look at how different it will be from the way where Vegas normally plays and how Derek Carr is normally played, I think there's some relevancy there.
Yeah, and for Burrow, too, does he wear a glove? Do we see kind of that situation where when he hurt his pinky and he was trying to put the glove on and he finally threw it aside? Does he wear the glove, have a bad series, throw it aside, go barehanded? Just a lot. The receivers catching the ball, they wear their gloves, but running those routes, taking a hit in cold weather, that people have talked about how you just feel that so much more. It's going to be a factor, and you're right. It's a factor for both teams, but people hammer on the Bengals all the time about not having an indoor facility, and they had the option this week to go to UC and practice in the bubble, and Zach Taylor said no. If it was raining or snowing, they would have done it to get good work in, but they wanted to practice outside this week in the weather that they're going to be playing in, and I think Vegas history aside, just the fact that they've been practicing in this, and it's been a little warmer the last couple of days, but I just think it's a little bit of an edge. And when you're talking playoffs, any little edge you get is significant.
Yeah. Kickoff against Kansas City was technically 38 degrees in that game. 1 o'clock game in the sun. So this will be much, because, you know, 27 for the high on Saturday. Well, the game will be played into the night. You'll have real feel in the teens, and, you know, you'll be closer to that than anything.
Yeah, because that 27 is going to hit probably about 3 o'clock by kickoff. You'll probably be down 26, 25. And once the sun goes down, it'll drop a lot quicker. By the end of the game, it very well could be 20 or approaching the teens.
Yep. This has been your meteorology report with Doppler 5. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Let's talk a little bit about playoff expectations for Joe Burrow. I was kind of, as I was doing this week in Bengals, you know, you guys know, and if you followed this year and, you know, season previews and talking about Burrow in the year two jump, I harped a lot on adjusted net yards per attempt as really just a key metric to show real true winning football at the quarterback position. It brings in sacks and interceptions and touchdowns to help calculate beyond just yards per attempt. And Joe Burrow ended up leading the AFC and was second in the NFL in adjusted net yards per attempt this year. And we talked about how this is where the champions come from. Like, this is where the teams that are playing towards the end of the playoffs, this is where they come from. It's the stat you see most. I wanted to point out that when you go and you look at adjusted net yards per attempt, I went back and looked through the last 5 years, and you look at the top adjusted net yards per attempt quarterback for each league and what their postseason run looked like. Seven of the 10 quarterbacks ended up reaching the conference championship game. Drew Brees in 2019 is the only one in the last 3 years not to make it to the conference title game. And, you know, think about that. I mean, that's what these quarterbacks do. I mean, when you have a season like this, when you have a quarterback playing at this level, you know, across the conference, it's where you end up, at least. Now, you've had a bunch that have made to the Super Bowl. Tom Brady and Matt Ryan back in 2016 both made it to the Super Bowl and played against each other. You know, Mahomes has made it to the Super Bowl a couple times leading his Rodgers. So you're talking about, you know, that's the expectation. That's where you should end up. When you have a quarterback playing at this level, it's where you should end up. History recently has shown that, and I think it's fair to expect that out of this team when you've got a quarterback playing like this, as you know, in comparison to the rest of the conference.
So you said he's second in the NFL. Who's first? Rodgers?
Rodgers. That's what I mean. Rodgers is number one. So, 7.51 is his number, which is actually the lowest of anyone to lead a conference in the last 5 years. I think that speaks to the uneven openness of this conference this year. You know, I mean, you had that Mahomes had that half a season. I mean, if you look at the back half, you'll see more of typical Mahomes numbers, but he had that half a season where he wasn't the same. There's been Josh Allen regressed. You know, you haven't seen any other quarterbacks really put up huge numbers that have been consistent across the whole year. And that's why Burrow has kind of shown up in this regard.
And as you said, that stat takes into account sacks and interceptions, and the Bengals have been high on one end and they've been low lately. I mean, Burrow four straight games without an interception. That is a winning formula, obviously, in the postseason. I guess what you're saying is Bengals Packers Super Bowl.
I'm not saying that. We will get to that. We will have our full playoff predictions at the end of this episode. We'll obviously predict this game, but we will have our full playoff predictions at the end of this episode, Jay. I don't want to give away where I land, okay? You don't want to give away where this thing ends, all right? Just take your time. Calm down. We'll get to that. I'm just pointing out, you know, the way the Bengals are constituted is the way teams that make runs are constituted right now. That's what I'm saying. And I think that's the important part of this. One other thing that just another number that I ran that I just think is important, hashtag Paul's Got Stats. You look at, we talked a lot about the insane number of Burrow with 15 touchdowns of at least 30 yards this year, which is just crazy. Since we go back through True Media, goes all the way back to 2000, since the turn of the century, that is the most of any quarterback in any season. The next most is 13, happened three times. Andrew Luck in 2014, Tom Brady in the perfect season in 07, and 2000 Dante Culpepper with Randy Moss on that team. Those all had 13. Burrow had 15. Touch. You just witnessed, Bengals fans, the most explosive passing season basically in NFL history. I mean, it's unbelievable what Burrow and this offense was able to do. And remember last year? I mean, remember training camp? We were like tracking if they would ever connect on a deep ball, because it was like, this is the thing they need to fix. This is what they were missing last year. They're supposed to be fixing this. We haven't seen hardly any in training camp. Every day it was like, oh, this was a deep ball that didn't hit. This is a deep ball that dropped. Is this team really going to be explosive? Not only were they explosive, they were basically the most explosive passing attack you've ever seen.
And what's important to remember there too is it's not – sometimes when you see a number like that that's so far above everybody else, it's kind of that one-trick pony notion, and that's not been the case. I mean, they have a good running game. They are able to attack teams other ways, and even the long ones, those 15 long ones, are not just throwing bombs down the field. They are short passes. I think of the Baltimore game with Ja'Marr Chase, the Kansas City one that may be remembered as the play of the year for this team in the regular season when they were about to get blown out, and he takes a short pass and runs away from everyone. They're getting their long touchdowns in different ways, and they're not just totally reliant on the deep ball, and that will serve them well in the postseason as well, because you can talk about it all you want. No matter how good your passing offense is, you're still going to have to run the ball in the playoffs, either to establish it early or to finish it off late once you get the win.
Yeah, I mean, I think a key for this team is certainly going to be efficiency in the running game. I don't think they need to be a great running team to win games in the postseason. I mean, I think that Burrow has shown that they can do enough in the passing game where they don't have to have it. It's what makes them totally scary when they do have that. And yes, the ability to put teams away with it is important, and to, more importantly, to keep Burrow out of passing situations, second and super long, third and long. Keep him out of those situations so you don't expose your weakness, specifically against the Raiders. It's where we talked about this against Kansas City too. You know, it's not about volume. This is not a volume thing. It is a efficiency thing. It's where this team is best because of their ability to keep themselves out of situations where it's second and nine, it's third and nine or eight, and they know you're throwing, and they can just attack your weakness is really what kills them, and it takes the efficiency out of your game, out of your pass game, and brings the sacks into play. And that's where you can get derailed offensively here. If you are efficient, if you're getting 4 or 5 yards per carry on when you do run it on first down or second down, and you have the option to run shorter stuff, to hand off, whatever, on those second and third downs, you keep them off balance. You keep them from just thinking they're just going to get right after you, and it makes everything more efficient, and it minimizes your obvious weakness, and that's really important. Jay, let's talk about sacks, though, because you've obviously done a lot. What was – when we look at the Bengals, I love our guy Ben Baldwin, Computer Cowboy on Twitter, mm-hmm. who does a lot of our analytics stuff. And he had the final kind of pass pro ratings had the Bengals finish 28th in the league. Here's an interesting thing about those pass pro ratings. They combine, ESPN has their pass block win rate and PFF has their grade for pass protection. And he kind of combines those two into a number to get a general whole. Of the top 10 teams in pass pro, 8 are in the playoffs. The only two that aren't are the Washington football team, who had a truly horrific quarterback situation, and the Cleveland Browns, who have a lot of other horrific situations that are hard to really put into words what they went through this year. The bottom 10 teams in pass pro have exactly 2 teams in the postseason out of the 10. The Bengals and the Titans, both who had very effective running games, and the Bengals, who had a quarterback who sort of offsets that with the magic that he's able to create. It just goes to show how high the degree of difficulty in creating that adjusted yards per attempt number has been. And one, before you just say, obviously, give this man a line and look to see what happens. Obviously, yes. But, I mean, it also shows, I mean, they really are overcoming a lot here, and it is not easy. This is extremely hard to do, to have this kind of a weakness on your team and still be sitting here at this spot in the postseason.
And the thing about the number is, and every coach is going to say this, they're not all, quote, legitimate sacks. There's times when they're in 4-minute mode and trying to run out the clock, and they'll run a naked bootleg, and there's somebody right there, and Burrow just slides to a knee and goes on to the next player. There's ones where he scrambles out of pocket and gets out of bounds for a 1-yard loss or at the line of scrimmage, and that goes as a sack. But I mean, every team has those, so you're still looking at the volume, and there are a lot. I think one of the more interesting things, and you kind of talked on it before about run game efficiency, is it's not the third down sacks that matter. It's the ones on first and second down that put you behind the chains and are so hard to overcome. And the Bengals have had a situation where you take out the third and fourth down sacks and get those out. And you look at the rest of them, when they take a sack on first or second down, they're surviving to move the chains and get another first down despite being in a bad situation 38% of the time. That is, wow. And I can't see where that ranks, because there's not a metric to look that up. You have to go through and look through every game book and find the sack and then see if they got the first down later in that possession. I asked Zach Taylor, and he said, you never want to say 38% is good, but if you're being realistic, that is good to be able to overcome 38% of those. And the other thing that really kind of surprised me when talking to him and Brian Callahan is, everybody says what you don't want is the free runner. You don't want that. You don't want a missed assignment where a guy is just coming free. And with Joe Burrow, he almost invites it. Brian Callahan said, as long as he knows where that guy's coming from, he doesn't care if he's free. He feels like he can manipulate the rush angle. He can spin out of it, step in toward it, do what he needs to do to make that guy miss. And then we've seen how good he is at making plays off script. And a lot of times that's where that happens. If you go back and look, there haven't been a lot of sacks where it's just been a guy teeing off on Joe Burrow. A lot of times it's the pocket collapsing, and they both talked about how smart he's been about just kind of covering up and going down, and you minimize the chance for a hard hit that's going to impact you later. You minimize the risk for a fumble, and you just live for the next play. It's almost the same as throwing the ball away, except you're losing 6 or 7 yards instead of going back to the line of scrimmage. But there's as bad as sacks are, it seems like they've been able to overcome them, whether it's letting a free guy come or whether it's taking one on first down and all of a sudden you're in second and long and you've got two plays to get it back. And even the second down sacks, there have been four times this year that they've converted third or 14 and longer. And everybody remembers the third and 27 against the Chiefs. It's another element to Burrow's game where things don't have to be lollipops and gumdrops. If he gets in bad situations, you had this in your story where he embraces the fight. He embraces the hardship. He wants it to be tough. He wants to overcome things, and he's doing it. And it's you worry about the bulk of it. It's not just the 51 sacks, but there's been 102 hits. There have been 51 hits that were not sacks, and you worry about the toll on that. But that was another thing that they talked about is it's you hear people talk about how a quarterback's clock speeds up, and it's not so much the cumulative effect over the course of a season. It's more if you get rattled two or three times early in a game, then maybe the rest of that game you speed up a little bit. And they just said that's not Burrow. He plays quarterback like a linebacker, doesn't mind the contact. He doesn't want it, obviously, but every time something bad happens in regards to a sack, he gives you a chance to overcome it. And I think that's a big reason why they're in the playoffs, despite giving up 51 sacks or 55 sacks, 51 to Burrow.
Right. And will be a big difference on Saturday. I mean, you know, if you're talking about a team that has the ability to get sacks and get after you, you know, how you overcome them, not having them totally beset you and have them not turn into turnovers is really the big difference in this game for a team that has been the Bengals so much better lately at not turning the ball over. You know, I mean, early in the career, we saw so many of these sacks and hits on Burrow would turn into strip sacks, or they would turn into a ball that he tries to throw anyway and gets tipped up into the air or whatever. I mean, you know, I think that's been part of the evolution too, is understanding that it is okay to take some of these sacks, and that number piles up and everyone screams and yells, and they should, because the line has to protect better. They have to fix that in the offseason, but that's a different story. The point is that, you know, I think in a game like Saturday, you don't have to be totally terrified of the fact that the Raiders can absolutely get after you, and that you can still overcome it, and this guy has overcoming. That's all important stuff there.
All right, let's just take a quick break.
Jay, let's get to your conversation with Vic Tafer, and we can start jumping even more specifically into Saturday's game. So let's bring out our guy, one of our tag team, Sean Reed, also with Vic out there in Vegas, does an incredible job, and talk about where the Raiders are at and the expectations from that side coming into Cincinnati this weekend.
All right, we're going to head out to Las Vegas right now and talk to our Raiders insider, Vic Tafer. And Vic, how are you doing today?
Doing good, man. How you doing?
Doing well. Looking forward to this matchup, but I don't know if there's any chance it could compare to what you saw Sunday night. I mean, you've been covering the league for a long time. Where does that game rank among the best you've covered?
Yeah, definitely top five, man. I've definitely seen so many Raiders collapses over the years that the way they blew that lead, I was kind of, I mean, you hate to say I wasn't surprised, but I wasn't, like, a lot of guys were numb and people were in shock, but fans were dead silent. But I've seen that before. So you think that they kind of turned the corner, then they hadn't. But, you know, they came back and won the game. I thought it was, it definitely shows that they're kind of the resolve, the defensive strengths. You saw Max Crosby flying all over the field, which he has all year. Been a huge reason why they're going to the playoffs. So I think, it was a great game.
I've noticed that they do walkthroughs on Tuesday and Wednesday. How significant is that disadvantage of playing such a long, crazy game on a Saturday night and then or Sunday night, and then getting saddled with the first game on Saturday.
Yeah, it's not ideal, but I think at this point they probably feel like, I mean, to use a Vegas term, they're kind of playing with house money. Like they've gotten, they won four in a row. People thought they were, you know, dead after that Chiefs blowout. Now they've kind of came back and made the playoffs. I think they kind of feel like their running game's coming around finally after a year struggled to run the ball. Josh Jacobs looks good. O-line looks good. I think they're in a good spot. They kind of they have the momentum going, and they kind of feel like they're playing their best ball right now.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that they were 6-7 after that Kansas City loss. I mean, was there a significant change, scheme wise, or something? You mentioned running the ball. I mean, anything that you can really put your finger on that they've done so much better over the last four?
No, I think they've done a. I mean, running the ball definitely been huge. I think they've done a good job as far as a defense, communication, and the secondary has gotten better. But I think really it was just kind of those. You know, the NFL is such a weird deal. The season, the way it goes. I think this year, especially like that game against the Chiefs ends. I think they're done. They play the Browns, who are decimated by COVID. Browns had no one playing. They had Nick Mullins was the quarterback. He's pretty bad. So that was kind of a gift. The next week they face the Broncos. You know, Bridgewater's out. Drew Lock was terrible. So that's another little break there at home. And then the next week they play Carson Wentz, who had COVID and then practiced the entire week. Kind of came, and his rust definitely showed in that game. Made some really bad play. So you take advantage of what's ahead of you, and all you can do is win. You can't really control who you play, but they've again, they've had some confidence and some resolve late, and they kind of willed their way to get to this point.
Because they have. Do you think Rich Bisaccia should get any votes for Coach of the Year, and any chance of them taking the interim tag off him?
Coach of the Year thing, I think, is tough because there are some guys who I think have built some standout resumes this year. I think with Rich, it's kind of like a package deal. I think he himself gives so much credit to the coordinators, Gus Bradley and Greg Olson. I think it's kind of those guys, you know, make the game plans and call the play. So I think it's more of a group dynamic they have going for him. As far as the long-term prognosis, and if he gets a full-time job, definitely his chances improve every week. Definitely, I think the players have shown and said they really believe in him. It's a very tight-knit coaching staff, which you can tell as far as getting their message across. So I think if they – I mean, I would say if they win, but if they even – if this game on Saturday is close, it's a close loss, I would think he probably is back. I think Mark Davis has probably seen enough as far as that this is heading in the right direction again.
I know it's hypothetical, but you think they're here? You think they're in the playoffs if the Gruden thing never happens?
That's a great question. So much happy with Gruden, then with the Henry Ruggs situation. I mean, it's so hard to figure what could have happened if things were different. But it's really hard to say. I mean, I think the Bisaccia and Greg Olson have done a nice job with the offense. I think Derek Carr is taking more chances. I think he's throwing the ball deep more often and kind of going for the PI calls, going for the defensive holding calls. Those are huge on Sunday night. I'm not sure that happens with John Gruden here. John Gruden's more of a, please check it down, don't turn it over kind of guy. I'm not sure John Gruden would love the off the back foot, heaves into the end zone at the end of the first half. So it probably would not be the same. Again, the coaching staff, besides Gruden, is still intact. So you like to think that it would be the same result.
You know, going back to the run game, I don't want to go all old takes exposed here on you. That would be rude of me to ask you on. But after that game, after the Bengals game, you wrote that they should abandon the run, and they got better. Did they get more efficient, or did they just commit to it more, and they got more yards because they were running it more often? I mean, what tack did they take there?
Yeah, they just committed to it more. I think they, Tom Cable's had some success as an O-line coach. I think he this bunch he put together is kind of a makeshift bunch, but a lot of young guys. I think they got a little better. I think Josh Jacobs really turned the corner as far as, I don't know if he started running harder, but I think he kind of ran with a purpose more than just kind of, at first he was kind of doubting his blockers, not really having confidence in where he should go. But now he's really, I think running the ball a little harder. So I think, So I think I was definitely wrong. I think my analysis was incorrect.
Or they could have won six in a row had they abandoned the run. Yeah, maybe exactly. You were right.
Maybe I was right. But I also think that I think maybe at the time I thought they thought DeSean Jackson might be more of a factor. He really hasn't been in play very much this last week. So I think they're not their weapons at receiver. I mean, Ballers been out for 5 weeks until last week. And so I was saying the number one guys are Zay Jones and Hunter Renfrow, who Renfrow's had a great year, but that's not really tough matchups physically for opposing defenses. So I think that you look at that, and maybe that's another reason why you double down and make sure you can run the ball.
So a lot of angst in Cincinnati about Crosby and Ngakoue and what they can do against this Bengals O-line that has given up multiple sacks in 10 straight games. That's the longest active streak in the league. Second longest active streak in the league is the Raiders have given up multiple sacks in 9 straight games. Where are they more vulnerable? Is it the tackles out on the edge, or is it the interior?
Tackles did a nice job. I think Quentin Jefferson had like a lot of pressures last week inside. I think one big loss for them was in this game against the Chargers. They lost Darius Filon, who's been really had a great month of inside pressure and he kind of plays with the anger, which really spreads to the rest of the defense. But he hurt his knee pretty bad. He's cut it off, so he's out for the year. So you have to replace him in the middle. Jonathan Hankins still has a bad back, so he's not going to play a lot. So I would definitely think they're probably – it's just like the first matchup. They're vulnerable to the runs inside with Mixon. And Mixon could definitely have a big day and wear him down like he did the first time.
What about that Raiders offensive line? Are teams attacking them up the middle more so than off the edge, or is it a little bit of everything?
A little bit of everything. I mean, they've gotten better, but they're still not good. And definitely, I think Derek Carr, who got hit really hard several times in that game on Sunday night, so you definitely can get to him. I think the whether it's he's pretty good against blitzes, so you shouldn't blitz him too much. He gets the ball, gets rid of it pretty quickly. But, yeah, definitely there were some inside rushes that got to him on this past week.
You know, the Bengals players are getting sick of all the questions this week about the 30-year playoff drought and the curse of Bo Jackson and that whole thing. I'm wondering, is the question that's bugging the Raiders players, are they getting asked a lot about dome team going and playing in the cold? How do you think that'll affect them?
They really haven't. I think, historically, Derek has not been great in cold weather, but that question's really not been asked. This week, everyone's kind of just I won't say cloud nine, but the Vegas media is loving this whole playoff thing. So I think this is very, very positive. I think and more so people are more excited about Darren Waller. He came back last week and was a little rusty, but he looks like he's going to be back and fully healthy for this game this weekend. So it's more about optimistic things than there are about reasons to doubt their team this weekend.
It's 6 walk-off wins this year, 4 in overtime. I mean, that's crazy. Anytime a team wins a championship, you always look back and say, well, this was the game they should have lost, and they pulled it out. And, I mean, does it feel like they've got some sort of magic going, or is it almost kind of a sense of the law of averages is eventually going to catch up to them?
Yeah, I'd probably say the second one, but you have to give him credit because, I mean, Derek Carr's always been really good in the 2-minute offenses. He's always, even in a bad year, he's always been good at that. And I think Daniel Carlson has become one of the best kickers in the league. He's got a huge leg, so he's good from 55 in. So, and the defense this year, I mean, they have their moments where they'll get, like this last game, they give up 15 points at the end of the game, kind of blow that lead, but they still make plays when they have to. I think the pressure from the front line is pretty good. I think Denzel Perriman's a playmaker and linebacker. He's going to the Pro Bowl. So there's enough there defensively. They can get the stop they need at the right time, usually.
So what do you, if you had to pick one or two things that you feel the Raiders have to do to spring the upset in Cincinnati, what's at the top of that list?
Yeah, well, number one, stop the run. I'm not sure how they do it. They stack the box, but I think that when, especially with Filon and Hankins not being 100%, that'd be my main concern. If somehow got to slow down Joe Mixon. And then, two, I think you talked about Ngakoue and Crosby. I think, the pressure has to be there. And if you can get to Burrow and rattle them, I think then you have a shot. So I think all my focus is on defense. I think the offense will score enough points to be in this game. The defense has to really, I think, make a stand and make some more plays to get this upset on Saturday.
Really intriguing, interesting matchup for two teams that just played a couple months ago. It feels like forever ago, and they've both changed so much. I'm really looking forward to this and looking forward to catching up with you in the press box. I appreciate you jumping on with us today and have safe travels into Cincy.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. Always good to catch up with the other side and great stuff from Vic there. Anything stood out to you, Jay, from that conversation?
Yeah, I didn't want to do it, but I had to do it. I mean, after that game out in Vegas, and he wrote where, oh, they just need to basically do what the Bengals did, just abandon the run and just start letting Derek Carr sling it around. And they did the exact opposite. And that's probably why they're in the playoffs right now, because they got back to Josh Jacobs, and he's been a factor down the stretch. And Vic admitted, you heard him. He said, I was wrong. But that it's amazing how that game doesn't seem that long ago. It was week 11. And these teams are so different just from that short time ago. Really good stuff from Vic. Looking forward to seeing how this is going to play out. I think we both kind of have our thoughts on how it's going to play out, but you just never know going into these playoff games what you're going to see.
Well, of course, Jay, you have stats on these playoff games and some lines of demarcation that we need to be looking out for. So I never want to keep people from their stats. So let's go. Start reeling off some stats for people to keep an eye on Saturday.
All right. Well, we'll start with sacks, since we were just there. And I only did the last six seasons, 2015 to 2020, just because the game has kind of evolved and numbers can be different if you go too far back. But teams that give up more than two sacks in the playoffs are 19 and 41. That's a 31.6 win percentage. Give up less than three sacks, or you give up two or less, it's 49 and 27, 64.4%. So that's where you're looking. It's not saying that the Bengals are going to lose if they give up three sacks, but if it starts getting up into that range, it really kind of decreases the chances. The other thing we talked about with the run game, yards per attempt was all over the place. Total rushing yards was all over the place. And maybe some people might roll their eyes at this stat, because it does seem like, you know, if you get a big lead, you run the ball, your attempts are going to climb. But anytime you have a zero in a number, it's significant. And teams that run the ball 32 times or more in a playoff game are 30-0. So
yeah, I'm with the eye roll community on this one. It's just because teams get up and they run the ball. I mean,
a lot of times.
For the most part, I'm with you. Zero is significant, but yep. I'm an eye roll community on that one.
Okay, well, so let's go to the passing side of things. Yards per attempt. The number there is 8.1. That's where you want Joe Burrow to be. Teams that have a quarterback that has 8.1 or better yards per attempt are 25-9 in the playoffs. And then the other big one that everyone knows about, the turnovers. And the number there is 1. You're good with 1. You get up in the 2 range, and your win percentage goes down to 27.6%. And that's just turnovers. That you could neutralize that by getting some takeaways of your own. But just in terms of committing turnovers, 1, it gets dicey. 2, you really, really reduce your chance of winning the game.
You mentioned 8.1 yards per attempt. Of course, Burrow led the NFL in that stat this year, 8.9. 3 of the last 4 games for Joe Burrow have been up over 10. Including exactly 11.4 each of his last 2 games. So, you know, that's one where you feel like he should still be able to cook. But we do know that the Raiders, you know, they are all about limiting those explosive plays, and how many of those happen might be a important part of what goes down this season. All right, do you have some? Can you give me some surprising stats, Jay?
I can, and this should worry Bengals fans. Right now, I have one stat that'll worry you right now. I have another stat that could create some serious angst about 6 o'clock on Saturday. I went the last 10 years and looked at the wild card round of the playoffs. Home teams are 17-21 in the wild card round in the playoffs. It's not, you would think home field advantage would be a big deal in the playoffs, and it's not. It's actually the road teams win more often. I found that I didn't find it super surprising, because you know from just watching that that can happen in these games, but to see it was under 500 really, really was surprising. The other one here, get ready for this. This one stunned me. Teams that trail by 7 or more at halftime. And this is, 7 doesn't seem like a major deficit in a playoff game, but teams are 3-37 when they trail by 7 or more at halftime. It's just, it's almost like there's no coming back from that. Even if you reduce that number and just say they trail by anything from 1-99, 10-53. And this is the last 6 years also. It's just, I only went back to 2015. But even if you, as long as you trail by any amount at halftime, it's 10-53. That's a 15.8% chance. We talked about the Bengals having slow starts. They seem to get it going in the second half. That's nice to know you've got that in your back pocket. But I think it's going to be far more important for them to jump out to a lead and try to hold on just based on history, because you do not want to have to be forced to battle from behind in the playoffs.
Teams that reach this level know how to finish.
Mm-hmm.
They're good at putting people away. That is typically the makeup of anybody playing this time of year. So yeah, I mean, that makes sense. That is still startling. 3-37. And you do get some blowouts this time of year, so maybe that's part of that too. But mm-hmm. still, that is some good stuff. Well, in case that you were worried a little bit and you're feeling a little nervous, we know how to offset that, don't we? We always know how to offset any nervousness amongst Bengals fans, right? Calling our guy, owner of 50 West Brewery, but Bobby Slattery, but better known as Optimistic Bobby. He's back. Felt like we needed to save him for this moment. You guys have been asking me a bunch to have him on. And so here we go. Here's our good friend, Optimistic Bobby.
All right. Well, it only felt right that as one of these moments arrives for this franchise, that we dip back in to and appreciate those that helped carry you through the dark times. And that's why we have taken this moment of all moments to bring in our friend, owner of 50 West, Optimistic Bobby, Bobby Slattery. What's up?
Hootie!
Wow.
Paul, I'm so happy to be back.
I can't. Is everyone okay in the house around you now? Have we made sure that? I mean, this is pretty early in the morning as we're recording.
No, it's all good. Everybody's just up reading Bengals Twitter, getting excited. I'm excited to be back. I mean, for a second there, you know, obviously I've loved the season, but I kind of felt like maybe I was like that, you know, the girlfriend that you kind of go to when you don't have anybody else.
No, you are the girlfriend that you save for the big dance.
Yeah. This is like in Teen Wolf when, like, Boo, I feel like Boof at the end of Teen Wolf when she wins all over again. That's probably too old of a reference for people.
Yeah, for our younger day, I think our older folks appreciate that. You know, we wanted to save you for the big. You don't want to wear it out. We want to make sure everybody knows that when you show up, it's special. And this just felt like the prime opportunity. When I reached out to you, I phrased it this way. It's that I just felt like that you have been in the Optimistic Bengals house forever, while others have not. And I think it's time for you to welcome everybody in, open the door, show them around what it looks like to be in an Optimistic Bengals world.
Hey, Cincinnati seems optimistic right now. I mean, you really can feel it. You obviously got the little lingering, but you said it at the beginning of the season. It was very un-Paul Denner-like, but you said, when we talked about the predictions, you brought it up on your show the other day, and you said at the beginning of the year at 50 West, I remember it being like, well, that's different for Paul. And you said, I feel like this team shouldn't have that many wins, but everyone has bet against Joe Burrow his whole life. And if you look at Joe Burrow's life, they've been wrong every single time. It's come true.
It has.
It's the greatest thing ever.
He's played incredible. And this could be, and this looks like it might be the next level for him. And it's just crazy. I'm just curious. Here's the thing about the optimism that I do feel, and that does seem real, and I think is legitimate around, is how much of you as a fan is just overdoing the optimism to sort of choke down the fright, right? Like choke away the fear with just pure, let's just talk about the good. Is there any of that going on?
No, I don't. You know what? So, okay. So I got a 9-year-old kid and this was his season. Okay. Beginning of the year, we did this whole season together. In the beginning of the year, you know, he's 9. So my nephew's a Packers fan. So he would have reminded him like, look, your Bengals stink. They're terrible. So my son's like, Dad, they're not good. They lose, whatever. And I kept telling him, I just would say like, buddy, Joe Burrow, just watch, like, watch this. And as the season kept building and building, and the amount of times in that season where it would look slim, and I'd say, hey, just Joe Burrow, just watch what happens. And sure enough, now my 9-year-old cried in that Kansas City game at the end of it. He couldn't believe it. It was like the greatest moment as a parent. I was like, holy crap, I just kept telling this kid Joe Burrow, and it actually worked. Like, it was incredible. So I think that you just watching the team, it's different. You guys brought it up on your show the other day when you're talking about, you know, it's an entirely different team. Now, I do agree. What's important about this game is if they just knock this nonsense out of the way and win this game, we don't have to have this like weird what's going to happen. Like, we won't have that build. The teams from the past, the issue was we had a series of losses that we kept drawing back to. But this is in a different team. And, you know, I feel like Cincinnati's in this moment right now. You know, when a DJ like drops the bass where everybody's like, oh, like if they win this game, that bass is going to drop and the city's just going to lose it. It's going to be insane. And I also think that if that happens, the coolest part about this is like, let's say we go into Tennessee the next week. I just think at that point, it's just this like frenzy of like, hey, we're going to win the Super Bowl. Like there's no, we have literally nothing to lose at this point.
The rave is going to go all night long at that point, right? You're just waiting for the bass drops to kick the rave off.
And everybody, even the biggest, like, you know, the haters of the haters within Bengal Nation, it's like everybody involved. I think if they win this game, even those people are just like, all right, I'm in. Let's rave. This is it. This is what we all want.
They all just, you know, they sat in the corner the whole time, but then they cracked the glow sticks and just started going.
Even then they're like, all right, this is fun. Let's go. Right. Like that's where we're at. And I think that it's at the point where everybody's in. Everybody's dancing at this point. And it's just a matter of, we want, Mo was saying, it'd be way more fun if this game was just a straight party all the time. And there's not that lingering, like, tenseness of, like, oh, my God, what's going to happen? Are we going to miss this? But I think at the end of the day, my thing at our take at the 50 West thing was Zach Taylor. The minute you brought Zach Taylor to our place, I think it was his first interview he did publicly.
It was.
This is, what, 3 years ago?
Yeah, right, after he got hired,
I've said this to everybody since day one. He just had an energy about him that was dear. It was just like, look, he had this positivity. I mean, that's a good guy. He just did some stuff there that was like just different. And then I remember watching that Seahawks game and they were all high-fiving on the sideline. And it was a totally different vibe. Just this like, look, we're going to be positive. We're going to be positive. And as somebody that thinks that way, when your team's bad, you look like a crazy person when it's not going his way. And that's what Zach looked like for the last 2 years. But once that thing shifts, it gets fun. And that's what we're watching right now. So there's just too many good things happening. You know, I think that it's a great time to be a Bengals fan. It's fun. And for, you know, the city of Cincinnati's about to get a bass drop on itself and we're all going to be, you know, raving for the next 3 weeks.
10 years. It's going to be it could be a 10-year rave.
Yes, the 10-year rave. That's incredible. So,
oh man, that's okay. Basically, though, you and Zach Taylor are essentially the same guy, and you probably think, and you kind of deserve some credit for all their success at this point.
Dude, I wouldn't say
you. No, you've carried a lot of people down the beach, through the sand, through the desert. Okay, where it went to one footstep. You know, you've seen that, right? Like it's because I carried you.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest, you carried a lot of people through some dark times.
I'll tell you this though. There's a lot more believers out there than you would think. The amount of times I've been down, the amount of people that come up to me that'll, like, we tailgate down there, and some guy that happened to be parked next to us found out I was Optimistic Bobby. It was the funniest thing. Like, my son's like, look at me, like, why is this guy so excited about this? There's a lot of people out there that are more optimistic. The problem is, and this is the same with anything you deal with, but it's always that minority voice of the negativity that kind of like amplifies itself, right? So I think there's a lot of positive. And for whatever reason on Twitter these last few weeks, I feel like they're that positive. You're seeing that shine through amongst this fan base. And, you know, it's going to be a fun time in Cincinnati. We just got to get to Saturday. Like, I think I've read too much of the same stories over and over and over again. I wanted Saturday to get here and that bass to drop and let's celebrate.
Let's crack the glow sticks.
Let's go.
That's actually probably not too far from the scene that will be happening at the Banks, at 50 West, at every brewery in the city.
Some lady wrote today about it. Some lady was on there saying, you know, talking about her hair salon. Everybody's talking about the Bengals. Like, I've never seen anything like this. You know, everywhere in Cincinnati, hair salons, nail salons, breweries, the whole scene.
Yeah,
it's gonna be fun.
So I assume the screens will be on at 50 West on Saturday, and the party will be rolling.
Yes. Right. We will be. If you can find us, we have a secret. We have a secret 50 West tailgate down at the stadium. We've been doing it all year. We're giving out our burgers and beer. We don't announce this. I'll just say we're in the north, one of the northeast tailgate lots, and we're very friendly people. So if you can find us, come down, grab a beer from us, grab some food. It's a good time.
Bobby, I love it. Thank you for making the beer. I found some and I just ran through. I just ran through the 12. I bought out Cappy's. Cappy's had 3 6-packs left, and I think they might have been the last three six packs in Hamilton County. And I think I own them, and now they're gone. But they were delicious. And
I Twittered Jay, told him come down, pick up a crowler. We owe him from the crowler bed.
He does. You do. He actually got it right. So all right, as long as you're good on that, we'll make sure you're clear.
I'm good.
And that's where we'll have the post Super Bowl rave come down party will be at 50 West.
I don't know. It's the whole city's partying. We're not going to limit this thing to one place. Everybody in Cincinnati is about to have a real good time. Thanks to Joe Burrow. So all right. Well, hey. Hooday, thank you for having me back. You're making me feel valued here, and to all you Bengals fans out there, I hope you're ready for just the party of your life that you've been waiting 31 years to celebrate.
You are valued, and on behalf of all those that have been begging me to make sure we had you back on for this moment, thanks for carrying them through the desert and arriving at this oasis. So that they hope will be this oasis, right?
This is what we did it for. It makes it all worth it. If you live in the oasis all the time, that's no fun.
No
right?
fun.
That's just, it doesn't feel like the oasis if you don't know what the other side feels like.
That's right. And you do. All right, Bobby, you're the man. Appreciate it. Enjoy the game on Saturday. Try to enjoy the experience.
Hooday, buddy.
Crack your glow sticks, Jay.
Thum, thum, thum.
That's right. Crack the glow sticks. Put on your very shiny gear. Put on, like, there's usually like furries and mascots at these raves. This is not me speaking from like rave experience. I have zero rave experience, but I have made up in my head what a rave looks like. Basically solely from movies and like episodes of Las Vegas. I'm pretty sure that's what it looks like. So all I know is crack the glow sticks time. If it goes down on Saturday.
I feel like if there were raves in the 80s and 90s, I would have partaken. But yeah, they came along a little bit past my prime. I love just the idea of having Optimistic Bobby on. I mean, it's such a full circle moment from the Thursday before the season opener to the Thursday before a playoff game. It made perfect sense to bring him back. And I think he may have just erased all of my angst stats with his outlook on this game.
We do not promote designer drug usage, I would like to say. I know that's associated with raves, but I think people would feel like they're on a fair amount of uppers if the Bengals were to crack the playoff drought on Saturday.
We don't promote them, but we don't dissuade them either. I mean, if you want to, go ahead.
Oh, Jay. I don't know. We'll let it go. We'll let it go.
Party responsible.
Because we got a lot of other stuff to get to. Let's dive in. We're going to go run, pass, or boot. We're going to offer up a growler bet. We are going to have predictions for Saturday's game, and then we're going to predict the entire rest of the playoffs. So we've got a lot to cover here still, so let's dive in. Run, pass, or boot. All right, Jay, what do we got for our first run, pass, or boot? We got a high-low edition.
Yeah, we'll start with the low. What will be, we're doing another confusing one here. We're going to start with a low, but what will be higher? Raiders pressures, Burrow yards per attempts, or yards per attempt, or Evan McPherson points?
Well, I mean, I think you're going to see a fair amount of pressures. I mean, I think the pressures will be in double digits, you would think. I think that's typical, particularly of a Bengals game and of this Raiders game. So I'll put them in double digits. So I will run with Raiders pressures. I think next will be Burrow yards per attempt, which I do think will be in the 9-10 range. And then I will boot the boot again of McPherson points and say I think he'll kick a couple of field goals and have a few extra points, but I think Burrow yards per attempt will be higher.
Maybe I should have gone hits, quarterback hits instead of pressures. But yeah, I agree. I don't know how many times they're going to get home and sack him, but I think pressures will be higher. I'm going to go the other way though for the pass. I'm going to go with McPherson. I feel like I don't want to give too much away with my prediction, but I feel like this could be more of a lower scoring game where they struggle in the red zone and they rely on Evan McPherson to get points. So I'm going to go with him for the pass, and I'll boot Burrow yards per attempt, even though that sounds crazy because he's led the league in that stat.
All right. So now we've got to have a high run passer boot. What do we got for our high run passer boot?
Okay, so this one is what is higher, the Burrow passer rating, Bengals rushing yards, or the highest individual receiving total for a player on either team. And if you want, even though last game was so different, Burrow's passer rating in that first game against the Raiders was 92.3. The Bengals ran for 159 yards, and Darren Waller was the high receiver in that game with 116.
Well, Burrow's passer rating has been up over 100 pretty consistently here for a month and a half. So this does make it hard. I'm going to say Burrow passer rating. Run with that. I'm going to pass on high individual receiving total because I do think we'll have somebody in the 90s, 100. I don't think we're going to see the Jamar Chase 266, but I do think somebody will probably get around that 100 mark. But I think Burrow will be above that, and I think rushing yards will be slightly below that. I don't know that rushing yards is going to cross 100 in this one. So those are my three.
I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to run with rushing yards. I could see the Bengals getting out to a lead and kind of just not running out the clock, but leaning on the run a little bit more. I'm going to pass on the receiving total because I think if that is the case, the Raiders are going to be throwing a lot. And I could see either Darren Waller or Hunter Renfro getting up into the between 120, 150, somewhere in that range. And I'll boot the Burrow passer rating. I know I say never bet against the trend, but it feels like at some point he's going to have to throw a pick, four straight games without one. And every time you throw a pick, it really dings your passer rating. So that's the way I'm going to go. I'm going to run with rushing yards, pass on receiving total, and boot Burrow passer rating.
Okay. All right. Let's get into the growler bet. Playoff growler bet. We just had Optimistic Bobby on. He said, Jay, you can have the free beer, the free growler that you earned last time. He's giving it to you. So nice. There's good vibes in that area. So maybe today we will get a winner. I don't know if we will, but this week's growler bet, hashtag Bengals growler bet on Twitter or pdaner at theathletic.com with growler in your header. You need to send me the time of the game when the winning team takes the lead for good. So that would be the time on the clock on the snap. That's in the game book, the time of the snap of the play where the winning team takes the lead for good. You need to be within 5 seconds of that time. Now, there are two stipulations for all you people who think you have an idea. You're listening right now. You probably already half sent the email. You put your witty growler thing in the subject head and you're ready to show me. Okay, inside 1 minute in the fourth quarter, if you say inside the last minute of the game, You have to be exact to the second. Okay. If you say inside the final 5 seconds, so you're thinking, I'll show you, Paul, walk off field goal for the win, McPherson at the gun, right? You need, if you say it's going to be inside the final 5 seconds of this game, you need to give me the distance of said play, whether it be touchdown or field goal, more than likely. And be within, what should that be within, Jay?
I think three yards. Three yards is fair.
Be within 3 yards in either direction. So you've got a 6 yard window for that if you decide that you want to go that way. Other words, you are going for anywhere else in the game. You got to be within 5 seconds of the time that the winning team takes the lead for good. And you can send those into hashtag Bengals Growlerbet or pdaner at theathletic.com with your answers. And if you win, Optimistic Bobby will give you some delicious 50 West beer to be enjoyed in maybe in the glow of a team that has recently had a postseason victory. We shall see. All right, it's now time for our Growlerbet picks, though. First, Jay, what do you got?
It worked last week, so I'm going to stick with it. I'm going to go 11-11 of the second quarter. The Bengals are down 7-3. Joe Burrow throws a touchdown pass to take a 10-7 lead, and they ride it out from there.
All right. I am going to go with, let's say, 3 minutes for a prime number. 3 minutes to go in the first quarter.
Wow.
Right at 3 minutes to go in the first quarter, the Bengals take the lead, and I'm with you. I don't think they give it up from that point forward. That's where I'll stand with that, which leads us to Saturday, 4:30 p.m., Paul Brown Stadium, Bengals, Raiders. The Bengals have lost 8 consecutive playoff games, but this team is new. This team is different. This team has checked off every historical box hanging over the franchise all season. That's all season long. There's only one left. There's only one box left. Really one box. There's a really giant Super Bowl box that's still out there, but let's start with this box. Jay, your prediction.
Yeah, I wanted to go Bengals 20, Raiders 10 to kind of flip the Bo Jackson curse. That was the score of that game 31 years ago. The Raiders won 20-10 in LA. But it's going to be a little higher scoring than that. I've got Bengals 26, Raiders 20.
Bengals 26, Raiders 20, giving them the win, snapping the drought. Bengals move on. One score game. So you've got them, depending on when people got the number, covering or not covering, because it did drop. You said it would after the game when it opened at 6.5 and it dropped down. Last I saw it was at 5.5. I don't know if it still holds there, but so you're going right in between that number.
Yeah.
I am saying Bengals cover. Bengals 27, Raiders 17. I just think they're the better team, and I think at a certain point you got to put all the other stuff away. You gotta just understand what this team has done all year. This team all year has taken things that the outside wants to hold against them and overcome them, and it has not looked like a part of their fabric at all. I do not think any history holds over this team or Joe Burrow at all. And I think they're the better team than the Raiders. I think there's a lot working against the Raiders. I think the Bengals are ready for this moment. I think Joe Burrow is ready for this moment. And you mentioned the Thursday before the season, and Optimistic Bobby brought it up, and I'll bring it up one more time. Don't bet against Joe Burrow. Mm-hmm. The moment gets big, don't bet against Joe Burrow. The moment is big, and so I'm going to say the Bengals do it and snap the playoff drought as well, 27-17. Now, let's go further, Jay. Let's play out the AFC. What do you have the rest of this weekend? I have my playoff predictions for every game that would be on the AFC slate all the way to the Super Bowl. Where you got?
So we do these predictions in The Athletic, and we did them all year long. We predict every single game, and we start. I came in last place. I don't know how that happened, but we started over for the playoffs, and I turned them in on Tuesday, and that was before I looked up the home and visitor stats, because I picked for this weekend, I picked all six home teams. So I have the Patriots losing in Buffalo, and I have the Steelers losing in Kansas City, and that results in the Bengals going to Tennessee, and it results in the Bills going to Kansas City. And from there, I'm going to make people mad, but I'm going to pick Tennessee. I think Derrick Henry is going to be back. The Bengals get their one win. I still think I don't want to bet against Joe Burrow, but I think asking for a deep run this year is just a little beyond their reach. On the flip side, I'm going to pick an upset. I'm going to pick Buffalo in Kansas City.
Wow.
And then you've got Buffalo at Tennessee, and the Bills get revenge for the Music City Miracle, and the Bills are the team going to the AFC or going to the Super Bowl representing the AFC.
Wow, you're taking Buffalo to the house.
I am. I'm a big Josh Allen fan.
Yeah, I'm a Josh Allen fan too. But I don't, you know, I don't know that I buy Buffalo. I'm not totally in on buying the Bills. I think the Bengals win this weekend, and I think they will go to Tennessee and win.
Wow.
I do. I have Kansas City over the Steelers. I have Bills over the Patriots, although I have the least amount of confidence in that game. That's, to me, is a coin flip, and it could go either way, which, same as you, would send the Bills to Kansas City. I have Kansas City beating Buffalo. I think Kansas City is still that team. I mean, think about what it took for the Bengals here to win that game.
Mm-hmm.
266 yards by Jamar Chase, a 3rd-and-27, flags, all of it. It took to beat Kansas City in that game. The idea of a team, you know, going to Arrowhead in winning, I don't see that happening. I think the Bengals beat Tennessee, Kansas City beats the Bills, and I think in the AFC Championship game, the Bengals play in Kansas City, a rematch game, and Kansas City wins the rematch and goes to the Super Bowl. And from the NFC, I have Green Bay. I just think Rodgers' last dance. It's all just going to play out. I think they finally break through this barrier. They've been in the NFC Championship game 2 years in a row. So I have Green Bay over Kansas City in the Super Bowl as my final prediction.
Yeah, I have Green Bay, Buffalo, and I've got Green Bay winning, beating Buffalo in the Super Bowl. Another Super Bowl loss for the Bills. Interesting dilemma here. In the AFC, if we're going to assume a Bengals win, so then you guys are all going to be partying and celebrating, you're going to go watch the Patriots-Bills game somewhere. I'm with Paul. I think this is going to be a really close game, and the road team in that series has won 3 straight and 4 of 6. So even though I'm picking the Bills to go to the Super Bowl, I could see the Patriots winning the game. If that happens, Bengals fans have a choice to make on Sunday. Do you root for the Steelers? Because if the Steelers win that game, the Bengals get a second home game. But if you root for the Steelers, do you really want this Walking Dead Steelers team that just won't die? Do you want them still around in the playoffs, or do you just root for the Chiefs? And if that's the case, it would be Cincinnati. It would be the Bengals going to Arrowhead if the Patriots upset the Bills. I don't know if Bengal fans can root for the Steelers. I don't even know if that's possible, but if it means a home game, maybe they do.
There is no doubt you're rooting for the Steelers. The Chiefs are the real enemy here. Okay? That is the real team. First of all, there's no way in hell this is happening. Okay? None. So, but the Chiefs are the real enemy. not the Steelers. You're not afraid of the Steelers. There's nothing about the way those two Steelers games have gone this year that should leave Bengals fans afraid of that team. You would love for that team to still be around. Forget the past. You would have erased the past at that point if you ever saw them. And the idea that would keep you from potentially ever having to go to Arrowhead, you are loving that idea. I think you are absolutely in love with it. So yes. And the potential of having a home game? Sure. Of course you would love the idea of that too.
You say no way in hell it's happening, but I mean, a Bengals win, a Patriots win, that's not that far-fetched just to get to that dilemma scenario on Sunday night.
Steelers not winning that game.
No, yeah, I know that. That's, I'm saying not Steelers winning, just who to get into that position of who you would have to root for. Correct. I don't know. Yes, your brain says root for the Steelers, but I don't know. These passionate Bengal fans, I don't know if they have it in them to actually root. Maybe they just don't watch the game and just say, let me know what happens after it's over.
Yeah, don't if it's really that painful to like actually root for Ben Roethlisberger, that's fine. But you absolutely should be. There is no doubt about that if they could possibly pull off the miracle of all miracles. All right. That will wrap up our exhausting podcast coverage from this week. I'm ready to be talking about what actually happened in this game and less about what could happen in this game as we now have wrapped it all up again. Jay and I on The Lead. If you want to go listen to that episode of The Lead, it is up as well. We have all our podcasts. We had the Monday live Q&A. We, of course, had the Tuesday. And now this whole episode here for you, all of our coverage, the Joe Burrow leadership story, the 31 years of the drought, talking to all of those who have gone through it and what it meant to them and what it could mean to if this team could overcome it. Jay's sack story is up. Jay's Q&A with Marvin Lewis up on the site. All of that, just go to any of those. Go to the link. Go to theathletic.com/hearthatpodcastgrowling or any of those links, and you can subscribe. If you are not a subscriber, highly recommend it. And we will have, of course, the walkout after the game on Saturday night up for you. And then we will have our live room Q&A on Monday still. We will still be on a Monday lunch break for that. We'll give you Sunday to recover from whatever happened and let the walkout serve for you that day. We'll be back Monday with the live room and then back on Tuesday. So that is the schedule throughout this weekend. Everybody enjoy this weekend. Take time to enjoy it. Don't live in fear. Try to embrace the moment. The Bengals are back in the playoffs. The Bengals have a chance to snap something that's gone on for three decades. That should be a fun experience. I hope you all find a way to enjoy it. And don't do any designer drugs. I don't care what Jay says. Crack the glow sticks. Leave the drugs alone. Don't do drugs, kids. I think that's a good way to end this, Jay, with a truly wholesome message. That's what we're all about here. So thanks, everybody, for listening to Hear That Podcast Growling. Have a good one.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.